Yeah, I think Frankie Valli will be in the studio sometime in October. Looking forward to that. Well, when we come back, our special guest tonight, this Labor Day night, Jeff Danilek, as we talk about the case for ghosts. In the next hour, we'll chat with him about reincarnation. Then, of course, your questions right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff Danilek has been a graphic artist for more than 20 years and a paranormal researcher writer for the last five. He enjoys exploring subjects from an objective scientific perspective. Jeff is the author of Reconsidering Atlantis, a new look at a prehistoric civilization, the mystery of reincarnation, and the case for ghosts, an objective look at the paranormal. He has written for Fate magazine and is currently pursuing a career as a novelist. Besides writing, his hobbies include science and Fortean subjects such as Bigfoot, UFOs, things that go bump in the night. All the things, Jeffrey, that we talk about here on the program. How are you?
I'm great, George. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. It's exciting. When they sent me last week your books, I didn't know which one to read first, The Case for Ghosts or Mystery Reincarnation. So, Jeff, I read them both at the same time.
Probably made more sense that way.
Let's talk about ghosts this hour. There are a number of subjects that our Coast listeners love, but when you talk about ghosts, that always seems to come to the forefront for their interest. Fascination with life after death. Why is that?
Well, I think it's probably the biggest issue that we face as human beings is, do we continue on after we die, or is this all there is to it? So I can't imagine a more important question that we need to answer in our own lives.
How about you? How'd you get interested in it?
Well, I think I've always been interested in the paranormal. I suppose it was kind of a natural transition from being an evangelical Christian, where you dealt with subjects like heaven and hell a lot, and I got thinking about really what does happen in this stage, and I just was sort of drawn into the whole concept of reincarnation, and then from there into ghosts, and just tried to put it all together to make sense to me.
I love getting definitions from our various guests into how they perceive a ghost to be. So I might as well ask you, what do you think a ghost is?
A ghost is a disembodied consciousness of a human being. It's always a human. It's not a spirit guide or an angel or anything like that. This is something that was once a person that has since passed on, exists as a conscious energy, but just doesn't have a corporeal form that it lives. It's more like a cloud of intellect, if you would want to define it.
Well, now, what the heck then is a haunting? Why do they haunt?
A haunting is really a locale that these conscious energies prefer to stay at. They will stay at a particular location, usually because they've had some sort of attachment to it in life, and they refuse to leave it after they die.
The fact that these once humans continue to hang around tells me that there's either some massive confusion on the other side, or there's this barrier there that doesn't let them move on. And I would have thought it would have been just a natural occurrence, but it obviously isn't. Why is that?
Well, you're right. I believe there's a type of transition zone that exists between the physical realm and the spiritual realm. And when you die, you move through this transition zone. As you move further through it, you become less connected to the physical, and you become more acclimated to being in this new spiritual realm. What a ghost is a person who has started to move into this zone after death, but for whatever reason, they either choose to stay in that zone and not continue the process or complete it, or they're afraid to move on. And so they stay in this little narrow strip between the two realms until they're either let out or they finally give it up and just move on as they're supposed to.
Why do so many people report seeing dearly departed loved ones as ghosts? There seems to be an incredible connection there.
Well, I think that the bonds of love are very tight in life and in death. I think a lot of people move on and they realize that they have left grieving relatives, spouses, children behind, And some people feel that before they can really move all the way through, that they want to assure their loved ones that they're okay, that everything turned out all right, that they're still thinking of them. And so the comfort ghost, what you're referring to, is probably one of the most common type of appearances that people report.
The phone calls, too, that come from some of these spirits, absolutely incredible. I mean, I got a call last week from someone whose grandmother had passed on, and her mother, of course, got the phone call from her grandmother, which was the mother's mother, and it was like right at the moment of death. And for a moment, I used to think that was a bunch of nonsense, Jeff, but I don't think it is anymore. How do they communicate that way? I mean, through a telephone, for crying out loud.
Well, I think it's the same way that they can communicate through other mediums, such as tape recorders or videotape, things like that. Apparently, the ability to create the right vibrational frequencies to communicate is some spirits are capable of doing this. Another suggestion that people have made is that the person is having a type of dream where they believe they've picked up a phone. It's a telepathic communication is what it is.
Jeff, your career is interesting because you've done work in the ghost area with the book, The Case for Ghosts, and also reincarnation. So my big question to you is how can we have people reincarnate, souls reincarnate, which I believe happens, and then some of them just simply stay as ghosts? Isn't it all or none?
Well, actually, a ghost is not a soul. A ghost is the personality that the soul generated. So the soul continues to move on in, you know,
all
back
right,
and
now
forth.
That's okay, so let's person passes on. He's mm-hmm. got a soul.
Right.
That soul may or may not get reincarnated. But you're saying that soul is not the ghostly apparition that so many people would witness?
Right. The soul is generating personality. Each time it comes into the flesh, it generates a new personality. And when they die, that soul moves on because it has nowhere else to go. It's a part of the greater divine mix, if you will.
And but, when you say moves on, though, it will either move on into another body or does it move on to what we would call heaven or hell?
Well, you got to think of it like a big figure eight. And one side of the figure eight is the physical realm and the other side is the spiritual realm. And the soul is moving in and out of this figure eight. It goes through one side into the physical. Then it moves out of the physical back into the spiritual and then back around into the physical. And it goes and does this eternally. And each time it comes into the physical, it generates a new personality. And the personality is what's experiencing the things that we call life. But then once that life is done, that soul moves on back into the spiritual realm to integrate the lessons it learned. But that personality may remain stuck in between there, and that's kind of what the ghost is.
Well, now, how does it manifest itself into something that people can see?
Well, it's probably through the use of ambient electricity in the air, what you would call static electricity or ionized particles. As you know, everything is made out of patterns of energy. Every object that you can see is nothing but just patterns of energy. And a ghost is a type of energy as well. What it's trying to do, I'm theorizing, is that it's pulling ionized energy out of the air, enough of it that it can actually create shapes and forms out of its mind that can reflect light and be seen and, to some degree, interacted with.
This energy that's in the universe that these ghosts have been part of, and we're part of as well, and I'm sure the soul is as well, natural, very normal?
Yes, actually, it's all that is. All that exists in the universe really is energy. Now, it takes on the form of matter in the physical realm, but matter is just a manifestation of energy. So there really is nothing but energy in the universe. It's just the way it's manifests itself that determines whether you're in the physical realm or the spiritual realm.
Years ago, I read a couple books. One was called the Egyptian Book of the Dead. The other was the Tibetan Book of the Dead. These were books almost like training guides to the hereafter that they tried to, you know, basically teach people before they passed on what to expect in the hereafter. We, in this country, in this society, we haven't done a good job telling people about that, I don't think.
No, actually, in some ways, I think that Western society is more spiritually primitive than Eastern societies. They have been at this a lot longer. They have put a lot more thought into it, whereas we in the West have a more scientific attitude. It's more of a, we want to see things logically, empirically proven to us, whereas in the East, they understand things are true on an intuitive level. And that's where we need to get back to if we're really going to understand God and life.
If you were asked into a hospital room where someone was about ready to die, and they were, awake enough to hear you, what would you tell them about what was going to happen?
I would say that they are just returning back to their natural realm, and that they shouldn't be afraid, that this is exactly what is supposed to be happening. And in fact, I had an experience very similar. This last summer, my mother passed away.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
And so it was. There was a process there where I explained to her that, you know, you have a great adventure ahead of you. You're going to be back with all the people that you know, that you've always loved and missed. And so that's what I would tell someone. I would try to help them understand that this is a positive thing that's happening, and it's a joyous event that they should anticipate eagerly, and not fearfully.
Is this moving on natural for them, or do they need to learn something first?
Well, actually, you probably need to unlearn things. You have to unlearn your fear of judgment, of hell, all those kinds of things that we've been fed.
And
what about
fear of dying? That too.
Well, the reason we fear dying is because we fear judgment. We fear punishment of some kind. If we really believed that we were going to a better place or a wonderful place, there would be no reason to be afraid. But there's always that sort of nagging doubt in the back of our mind that we're headed for, you know, did I live my life well enough where God won't, send me to hell? And that's what we're really afraid of.
Well, that's pretty true. Okay, so you're talking to this person who's about ready to die. You're comforting them in some form or fashion. In your opinion, then, Jeff, when they die, what happens?
Well, the first thing that happens is they recognize that they've separated from their body. They can probably look down upon themselves and look upon other people, and they suddenly recognize the fact that they are not part of the physical realm. And then eventually, as they move into this transition zone, they will start to sort of separate from their mind, from the personality or the ego, and they'll start seeing what they really are as a soul, as a part or an emanation of God. And they will move through that process into more of a complete wholeness. And I believe that when you die, you kind of get what you expect to see. If you expect to see your loved ones, that's what you'll find. If you expect to see Jesus or Buddha or Allah, that's what you will see. So some of it is created, but there's also an absolute truth behind it once you move further through the process.
Well, this communicating with ghosts, who's the receiver, who's the sender? Is it the ghost that's sending the signal to the human that picks up on it, or is it the other way around?
I think it's a bit of both. I don't see that there's necessarily a difference between putting a message out into the universe or getting one back from it. It's all communication. It's just that when you're dealing with someone who's in the spiritual realm, it's a little bit more difficult to get that thought through. But I do believe that people on the other side are able to hear us and understand what we're thinking and feeling. And sometimes, either through a dream state or through telepathy, or sometimes actually in appearing and manifesting themselves directly, they're able to touch us, come back into our realm just long enough to send us a message.
I was going to say, what is the best way to communicate, through dreams or something else?
Well, it's been hypothesized that when you dream, you're actually not in your physical body. You're kind of in this transitional state. You're in this ethereal realm, and that's where it's easiest to communicate. My wife has had a number of dreams where she's spoken to her parents about different situations, and it seems to me to be the easiest way of communicating with departed loved ones is in that sort of a state.
Well, how do we know, though, that it wasn't just a dream, a real dream, as opposed to a communication?
Well, a lot of it depends on what comes out of the dream, what kind of communication she's having. For example, when we were dating, She had a dream where she sat down and talked to her father at the kitchen table about whether or not she should marry me. And she had this give-and-take conversation with him, just like she would have if he were alive. Now, I suppose a psychologist would say, well, she had just created this as a mechanism to make a decision. But I also believe that, you know, she's always very close to her father, and that's exactly what she would have done, and he would have recognized that. And I think that that's basically the preferred method that the dearly departed have.
And I assume that was a positive response because you got married.
No, she ignored everything he said, married me anyway. But, you know, so it still turned out okay.
Well, how come science has a difficult time trying to prove what you're talking about tonight?
Well, the thing with science is they're looking for empirical evidence, something that's repeatable, predictable. That's the scientific method. When you're talking with the paranormal, these things are not usually predictable, repeatable. You don't know if an entity is going to manifest. You can't predict that it's going to. It's so much more difficult to acquire solid scientific evidence. You can't. You don't have a corpse. You don't have anything you can study on a microscope. So the bar is so much higher to prove the paranormal.
What about these EVP sounds? Can they use that as proof?
Not as proof. That would be evidence. Proof is something where there would be no discussion. You know, science would say, yes, there are ghosts, and that's the end of it, because you've proven it. But evidence is another thing. There's plenty of evidence. It's like Bigfoot castings of, you know, footprints. You know, those are evidence for it, but not proof. EVPs are among the more interesting evidences for ghosts. But again, a lot of scientists would come back and say, well, you know, the brain dislikes disorder. And it will try to bring order to any kind of noise, just as it will with pictures. So when you're hearing these voices or whatever it is on an EVP, they will just claim that this is just your brain trying to bring order to this static or whatever it is you're hearing. So again, it really is kind of dependent upon your worldview. If you don't believe that the soul survives, or the personality survives death, then there is no such thing as ghosts by necessity. So it's really kind of how you come and approach the evidence to begin with that's going to determine what's evidence and what's not.
Now, when somebody dies tragically, God forbid, like this case with our friend the crocodile hunter Steve Irwin, and it's a very rapid, tragic death, in some cases we hear about car crashes and things that the ghost kind of hangs around. Why is that?
Well, sometimes the death can be very traumatic, and they are sort of stunned into really not doing anything, kind of like the deer in the headlights kind of thing. Like, well, what happened? What's going on here?
So it takes them a while to try to get oriented in terms of what did happen?
Exactly. If it's very quick like that and they weren't expecting it, sometimes it can take a while. Now, of course, once you pass over, you're not really subjected to time. So your stunned indecision can last months from our perspective.
Or maybe even longer.
Yeah, but it might take only seconds from your perspective.
That's true. Well, when we come back, Jeff, let's talk about some of the harder evidence that might be out there. Is there anything else out there?
Oh, there's quite a bit, actually, especially with the field of electromagnetic energy.
You know, Thomas Edison, before he died, I think was getting close to develop a piece of equipment that might have allowed the communication with the death, with the dead. I think if anybody could, it would have been him with his brain. It's too bad, you know, there are some machines that are out there, but I think he would have built the right one.
Yeah, if he'd lived a little longer, it'd be interesting to see what he came up with.
What's your website?
It's OurCuriousWorld.com.
I like that. OurCuriousWorld.com, and we'll be back in a moment with our guest, Jeff Danilek. We're talking about the case for ghosts, an objective look at the paranormal. Next hour, we'll talk about reincarnation. And then this Labor Day night, your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, find out why so many people are subscribing to the After Dark newsletter, getting fantastic stories every month. And right now you get 14 issues for the price of 12. That's a pretty good deal. How do you get it? How do you get After Dark, which comes in full color? Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at www.coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Yes, you are listening to a live program this Labor Day night, as we will do most holidays for you. As long as they fall on a scheduled work night, the program will be live, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, whenever, we'll be here. Our guest tonight, Jeff Danilek, as we're talking this hour about ghosts. Jeff, the evidence, and that's the important thing here, the evidence that's out there. Let's go through some of these things. You just mentioned electromagnetic. Tell me more.
Well, electromagnetic fields exist in nature all around us. All equipment, televisions, computers, everything that's electronic puts out an electromagnetic signature, including ourselves. So what they do in a lot of ghost hunts is they are able to measure this field in a particular location. And what they do is they do a run-through, and they see what the baseline readings are. And then what you do is you set up your electromagnetic readers or meters, and you wait for a change in it. And when you have a paranormal experience, quite often you will get a dramatic rise in the electromagnetic energy in a particular location. And if you can't find a naturally occurring source for it, that's a good indication that you have something paranormal possibly going on.
Are you a believer that this universe was created by a higher power?
I believe that this universe is the higher power. I believe that everything is a part of God and everything is an emanation of it. So to answer your question, it's both created and co-created by itself.
Okay, and I've always believed that everything is like a piece of a puzzle. There's a bigger picture, but everything has its place. Everything has its order. There's a reason for things, or they wouldn't be here. I believe the same thing of the spirit world, the ghost world, that whatever they really are, they have a purpose. Have you come to that foundation yourself? And if so, what do you think the purpose is?
I think that ghosts have a number of different reasons that they're here. Some of them do have a purpose. They have a particular mission or something they're trying to accomplish. Some ghosts, I think, however, are here because they refuse to let go of the physical realm. They're too used to it. They don't want to move on. Some ghosts are merely curious. They want to find out what's going on, how it works. Some ghosts are mischievous, and I think there are also some that are malevolent or angry that stay for different reasons. So I don't think there's any one reason that there are ghosts, but I think there's lots of different reasons.
Why do some people, Jeff, see ghosts? Little kids have great ghost stories. They see little ghosts and big ghosts. And then others don't see the ghost. They might see something move or here's something that's kind of haunting. So why on one hand can we see these apparitions, and then on another, we can't?
Well, I think in the case of children, since they have just come from the spiritual realm most recently, that they still retain some of that ability to still kind of transcend the two worlds. I think this is something that we lose as we grow older. Either we decide that there's no such thing as ghosts, or that we don't have the ability to see them, and we kind of shut off those intuitive mechanisms in our body that would allow us to sense them. Some people just naturally have heightened abilities in this area, just like some people are naturally more gifted musicians than others. So there's a couple of different reasons why we can and cannot see them.
Now, do you go ghost hunting yourself?
I've gone on a couple of ghost hunts with a local paranormal group just to kind of see how they do this and what the equipment they use. A lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
And local is where for you?
Denver, Colorado.
Okay. And everyone listening to you right now then in KHOW, our superstation in Denver.
Absolutely.
Now, when you go on a ghost hunting mission, do you bring certain things? What do you have?
Well, I don't, but the people that are running it, yeah, they bring a lot of camera equipment. They bring recording equipment, the electromagnetic readers. They were talking about a lot of computers to tie it all together. It's a really quite an extensive operation, really.
And have you witnessed anything?
I haven't seen anything. However, the last ghost hunt I was on, we did get some interesting readings off the electromagnetic readers in an abandoned theater that we were staking out. At one point, we were just sitting quietly in the stands, in the balconies and stuff, and there was a certain level of electromagnetic activity going on. It was pretty steady. And then all of a sudden, for no reason, this level just dropped to nothing. And there was no reason for it. I wasn't moving. I was just sitting in one spot for half an hour. And all of a sudden, the needle just went from, you know, a very high reading to a very low reading in just a couple of seconds, which tells me that something either left or passed through or some. It was interesting. I thought that that would do that when it did.
It wouldn't have been just some kind of anomaly with the equipment.
I don't see why. It continued to work fine after that. So there, it didn't seem like there was anything wrong with the equipment. I mean, I suppose if I had two of them side by side, it would have been interesting to see if it happened on both of them. But there was nothing that implied that there was a problem with it.
Every once in a while, we'll put up some great ghost pictures that people send in to us on our website. The ones to me that are strange are these so-called orbs, because some of them could be light reflections and things like that. But what are they, in your opinion, Jeff?
Well, the few legitimate orbs, and by that I mean the ones that aren't dust reflections or insects in front of a lens and stuff, the biggest theory that I've seen, or the best theory I've seen, is that these are essentially ghosts in a very primitive state of manifestation. It's like a thought bubble or a consciousness bubble, if you will, that they haven't acquired enough energy to really take on any more of a substantial form. So they exist as this small sphere of energy, and that's what a true orb is.
They have, are they like, I don't want to say solid, obviously, because they're not, but they seem to have some form to it.
Right, and what they're actually trying to do is take on more form. They go from an orb to more of a vortex or a type of wispy cloud, and then if they pull up enough energy, they can actually start manifesting limbs and recognizable features.
Oh, they can.
That's the theory that I've heard, yes.
Interesting. Okay, so we've talked about the good aspect of ghosts. What about the bad aspect? What about the demons? What about these creatures, these things that are out there that are, you know, apparently real, but, I mean, they've got a different kind of a mission. What are they?
Well, I believe that whatever energy that you live around in your life, whether it's positive or negative, I think you take that with you into the afterlife. So if you're a negative, angry, violent person, when you die, I think you take that energy with you. And that energy is kind of clogging you up. It's keeping you from moving through the transitional zone, if you will. And that energy tends to be attracted to other people who put out negative energy and enhances it. So I think what a lot of people call demons is a sort of mythologized explanation for what are, in fact, just angry people or evil people that have passed on and refused to move all the way through.
And they just continue doing their demonic things.
Well, they do what, from our perspective, is considered evil or destructive. From theirs, it's just their natural way that they operate. They just look for other negative energies, and they are attracted to it, and people who put out negative energy will attract them.
In your career, in your investigations, any stories out there on demons really making life horrible for people?
Well, interestingly enough, when I was 21 years old, I had an encounter with a malevolent entity. I had an apartment down in San Diego. And one evening, all of a sudden, this overwhelming sense of foreboding or evil just kind of came over me. And it was just this, like, thick, like a blanket. And I had no idea what it was, but I would start speaking to it. And I told it had to leave, that I didn't want it there. And as I continued to do this, it started to dissipate. And it came back the next night, but not as strong. And it dissipated again fairly quickly. And then after that, I never had another encounter with it. I don't know why it chose to appear when it did, but it was an interesting experience to be in the presence of something that was that angry.
You might have been a lucky one, though, Jeff.
I don't know how lucky I was, but maybe it was one of those things where you experience that years later is going to come back as something useful that you can use.
You know, but we hear tapes all the time of exorcisms and people who may have been demonically possessed. Is that real, or is the person just, you know, imbalanced, whacked out, whatever?
Well, I think there's a number of different explanations for possession. First of all, I do believe that malevolent energies can sometimes attach themselves to people and enhance their own negativity. It's not a full-blown possession because the person still has their own free will, but those things could impact. I think there's also a tremendous amount of power in the human mind and human psyche. And if a person believes that they are possessed, they will often take on the manifestations of that possession. So some of it, I think, is really in your own head.
Of course, as you know, the Vatican has dedicated a branch of priests to exorcisms. They're even teaching courses on it now.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting. For many years, the Vatican was very careful with possessions. So they would rarely, if ever, certify a genuine possession. And they considered most people who thought of themselves possessed as being suggestive personalities or people who were mentally or emotionally unbalanced or looking for a religious explanation for a psychological problem.
Well, why the switch then? Why set up a division and also courses?
Well, they've always had that, of course, but I suspect now it's becoming a little bit more acceptable to be talked about in mixed company, so the church is simply responding to it. Probably as more people believe in possession, they're probably encountering more cases of it, too. Whether they're real or not is irrelevant. It's just that people are beginning to believe in it, so it's suddenly manifesting itself.
Well, they're out there, and they are they have played havoc with people's personalities, and this is beyond the exorcism movies, of course.
Well, yeah, and now in the Bible, there's a story of Jesus encountering a demonic, and I thought it was an interesting story. I included it in my book. It's out of the Gospel of Luke, and it's the case of the Gerasenes demonic, where Jesus and his disciples land, and this demon-possessed man comes up to them, and he says, you know, who are you? He says, we are legion, for we are many, and he casts the demon out, or demons, into a herd of pigs who drown themselves into the lake. And I always thought that was an interesting story, because I always wondered why the demon-possessed man came to Jesus. Well, you'd think that if a demon didn't want to be cast out, it would run from Jesus. It would go just the opposite direction. But it's almost like this man who probably had some kind of a psychotic problem. He was probably psychotic. But in that context of that era, that would have been seen as a demonic possession. And he came to Jesus for healing. And Jesus used his own belief system that he was demon-possessed to cure him of what I think was a psychological disorder.
I've noticed you've done some work in Ouija boards, and you know, I've always said that, you know, Ouija boards are not to be played with. I think they can be demonically possessed. They open up portals. I've only had and heard now one story where a Ouija board introduced someone and they've been happily married ever after. Seems like it's been a good ending. Well, of course, the ending hasn't occurred yet, so you never know. But What's your take on Ouija boards, Jeff?
Well, I think that most of it is just a parlor game. It's you're moving it through autonomic reflexes in your arms and hands unconsciously. But I also do believe that the mischievous entities, those that we would call kind of immature ghosts, or perhaps mildly angry ghosts, can be attracted to that energy. So if you have people there who are not particularly mature or emotionally stable themselves, and they can open a kind of, I suppose you'd call it a portal.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Where these malevolent energies would be attracted to that and can cause some problems. I think for people who are mature and they know what they're doing and they're not prone towards a lot of nonsense, I think that you can use it as a means of communicating with these entities, although probably it's better to leave it alone unless you really know what you're doing.
Is that what you call automatic writing?
Now, automatic writing is a little bit different thing. It's where you take a pen in hand, you put it on a piece of pad, and you just let the entity take over your arm.
And it just spouts off all kinds of things.
Right. And sometimes they've actually been able to identify who is doing the writing and match up the handwriting and find a match, which I think is really...
You mean when the person was alive?
Yes. They find some samples of their handwriting.
Okay, like somebody says, I was Benjamin Franklin. You know, that's just a far case, of course.
Right.
And then you go back and look at some of Benjamin's writings, and you match it up, and it's the same?
Right.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's been some cases of that recorded, which I thought was really remarkable evidence for the paranormal.
What would make those ghosts, then, want to communicate that way?
Well, these are probably either mission ghosts or they're curious ghosts. These are ghosts that are... They perhaps have an interest in the paranormal. They had it in life. When they die, they might want to see what they can do with it from the other side. I can imagine that were I to die, being that I'm interested in the paranormal, I might be tempted to kind of hang out in it just to see how it works.
You have to arrange a broadcast with me from the other side, Jeff.
Yeah, I'll call you.
Call me. Call us in. Make sure it's not collect, and we'll interview you. I wonder, though... Now, you bring up something kind of fascinating. If you were on the other side, do you think you'd be able to see something? Would you see other spirits? I mean, would you see what we would call landmass now? Maybe it's just a figment of whatever is out there?
Oh, yeah. I think that your spiritual senses are much more heightened on the other side, and you would probably be able to see and interact to some degree with the spiritual realm. Which the thing is that's different is that you would also be able to interact to some degree with the physical realm. And that's what makes you a ghost. So I think it would be kind of an interesting experience to be able to be kind of right, have one foot in each world.
How come they always say your loved ones are there waiting for you?
Well, because they are. In fact, and it's not, this is what's a little bit strange, is when you go out of the physical realm, you're out of time and space. There is no time in the spiritual realm.
Right.
That means that when you pass over, not only everybody that passed before you is there to meet you, but those who you left behind are actually there to meet you as well.
Were you a believer in this from the get-go?
In ghosts?
Yeah.
I think this, I've never really doubted the survival of the soul, so I've never really had a problem with ghosts in my whole life. I've never seen one that I can, you know, honestly say that convinced me. But the idea makes sense to me logically.
I got to tell you, I thought a couple of years ago that I saw one in the back seat of my car in the nighttime, you know, whose eyes were in the rearview mirror. And I'm telling you, not a lot freaks me.
Mm-hmm.
That freaked me. I mean, when you look and you think there are eyes back there, and you know, it's difficult when you're driving down the freeway to turn around and look. But it's a very weird feeling, Jeff, of feeling something behind you, and you think you see it. I mean, it's really strange.
Right, and the problem is that you're not expecting it, and it's in a situation where you're not really prepared for it. I've had experiences where I felt that my mom was around, but I was, like, expecting it, and I was kind of, like, very open to it.
But I'd rather have your mom around than some demon in a mirror, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Stay with us. We're going to talk about reincarnation when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.